to be a part. And we're probably missing a few, too. Others traveling this time of year, and we wish them well and pray for their safety. If you're missing, we've been studying the Exodus and wanderings in the wilderness. We're in Exodus now. We'll be picking up on Exodus 15, but right at the point where they've crossed the Red Sea, so we've had a lot of stuff going on before this. Of course, the Pharaoh that didn't know Joseph and oppressed the Israelites and Moses in the basket in the river, and that story, and how he was found by Pharaoh's daughter. Which most of y'all are familiar with these stories, and how he grew up and ended up killing an Egyptian who was oppressing the Hebrews, and how he had to flee to Midian. There he met a fellow who had a daughter. Jethro was his name, and Zipporah was her name. And he ended up marrying her and having a couple of sons through her. Of course, we went through Moses and him at the burning bush, and God coming and talking to Moses. And Moses was a bit reluctant to do what God was asking him to do, but God wanted him to do it, so he did what he had to do, and of course he did a good job. He got help from his older brother Aaron, and of course we've been through where he goes back, talks to Pharaoh a couple of times, trying to get where they go out into the wilderness and worship for 3 days, and of course Pharaoh's was reluctant to let them do that, so they were unsuccessful, and then of course God brings on the 10 plagues. The last one being the death of the firstborn, and all that played out, which stories y'all are familiar with, I'm sure. And finally, Pharaoh letting them go, and we've got to where they cross the Red Sea, and about to go into the wilderness. So there's a lot of this is epic stuff going on here. I guess that's why they make movies in Hollywood. About this, because of the big giant events that go on and the miraculous events, but it's kind of epic to us too as New Testament Christians, because of a lot of things that happened back in the Exodus are brought forward in the New Testament, and we get a lot of lessons from them, a lot of examples from them, and it helps if you're a New Testament Christian to go back and look at these stories, these events in the lives of the Israelites and great men of faith, so that you can see the application that's being made in the New Testament to Christ and the church and our worship even now and even further into heaven, into the future. And I wanted to, by way of review, I wanted to look at some of those. And I got a few that I thought of, and I thought that maybe y'all think of some too, feel free to go ahead and bring them up. The first one I thought about was when God met Moses at the burning bush, which wasn't consumed, he told Moses his name that the Israelites had not known of him as before, which is I am who I am, is what he said. If you look in, we talked about this in an earlier class, but I want to reinforce it. In John 6, what I have up here on the screen is before Abraham was, I am. And if you're in that class, who said that? Huh? God said, I am who I am, but not in John, it wasn't God in John 6. Jesus said it. So I think that's significant that Jesus is part of the Godhead, and what reinforced it to me was this passage in Hebrews 11, verses 24 through 26. And I just got a part of it up here. And this is the part of Hebrews where it talks about the great men of and women of faith examples of faith. And it says here that Moses, and this is talking about him at the burning bush, is it the event there, and how what Moses was thinking at that point. So this is inspired by the writer of Hebrews. And it says that Moses esteemed not the reproach of God, which is who he's actually talking to there at Mount Sinai, but he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, or he looked to the reward. So that kind of, extends past the moment that Moses was actually talking to God, but he considered the reproach of Christ and looking for the reward. It's the reward was more than what was happening to Moses at that time, even getting Israel out of Egypt. But I think it's looking forward to a greater reward, a reward even we look forward to today, which is the reward of heaven, is what Moses was looking forward to. As we go through this story, we'll see if it's an earthly reward that Moses was looking forward to, he was sadly disappointed, because that would have been him getting to go into the promised land. It's, most everybody here knows our Bible story that Moses didn't get to go receive that reward. And there are reasons for that. So I thought that was kind of significant. Another one. We talked about the Passover and the Passover lamb, and I talked about the Hebrew word for it was Korban Pesach, and I didn't have it on a slide, so it was a little bit confusing what I was trying to say. But that's where we get Paschal lamb from, and I tried to describe it, so I thought I'd go ahead and get a picture out so that people can see what I was talking about. You may have heard the phrase Paschal Lamb. I know it's prevalent in the Catholic faith. And you can probably see this in a lot of their cathedrals, this symbol or this image of a lamb with a halo carrying a long cross and with a banner with a red cross and a white background. So it's just a symbolic thing that they have. But I brought it up and wanted to share that with you so you know what I was talking about. But going on, talking some more about Passover and the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. This carries on into the New Testament also. If you remember in John 1, if you want to turn in your Bible there, John the Baptist, when he sees Christ approaching, John chapter 1, yep, 29. The next day, John saw Jesus coming toward him and said, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." And down in verse 35 and 36. Again, the next day, John stood with two of his disciples, and looking at Jesus as he walked, he said, "Behold, the Lamb of God." Now, that was significant to John. I mean, it's the symbolism of the Passover lamb, and John the Baptist calling Jesus the Lamb is huge. The Lord's Supper that we have every week has some symbolism. It was done during the Passover when the Lord instituted it. The bread that he used was unleavened bread, because that's, remember when we studied the Passover, that's all they were to have in their houses. So the bread that the Lord's Supper was unleavened. And of course, it's representative of Christ's body. The blood of the Lamb on the doorway. You remember when they sacrificed the Lamb, they took the blood and they took hyssop branches and they painted it up and down the post and the lintel or header across the doorway. Well, the fruit of the vine is symbolic of Christ's blood. And that shedding of that blood is what saved the Israelites. And the shedding of Christ's blood is what saves us. So, the lamb that was to be sacrificed was to be firstborn. And the feast that they would have, Passover and unleavened, feast of unleavened bread had every year, they were to sacrifice their firstborn animals or redeem their firstborn son. Well, Christ was God's firstborn, but he wasn't redeemed. He was actually sacrificed. So he is our Passover lamb. He was sacrificed on our behalf, and his blood was shed on our behalf. And that's what saves us, just like the blood of the Passover lamb saved the Israelites back in Egypt. And then, of course, in Revelation 5, it's just in using the Lord's Supper Sunday morning. It's talk about the Lord's Supper. It's really good and really fitting. Several references to the lamb. Chapter 5 of Revelation, verse 6, and I looked, and behold, in the midst of the throne, and the four living creatures, and in the midst of the elders to the Lamb, as though it had been slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. And then if you drop down in verse 11, and I looked, and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne, the living creatures and the elders, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb who is slain to receive power and riches and wisdom, strength and honor and glory and blessing. And every creature which is in heaven and on earth and under the earth and such as are in the sea, and all them that are in them, I heard saying, blessed and honor and glory and power be to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb forever and ever. Four living creatures said, amen. And the 24 elders fell down and worshiped him who lives forever and ever. So these events we're studying now push on into the New Testament, push on into heaven. And so it really brings out understanding what we're studying now really helps with how we worship today and how we will be worshiping in heaven also. Another example is for in Exodus 12:48, no uncircumcised person was to eat of the unleavened bread during this feast. Colossians 2, verse 11 and 12, we have an example of circumcision in the New Testament. In him you were also circumcised with the circumcision made without hands by putting off the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, buried with him in baptism, in which you also were raised with him through faith in the working of God who raised him from the dead. So that's our New Testament circumcision is baptism. And so when we have the Lord's Supper, is there some restrictions to who can partake of the Lord's Supper? Yeah, those who are baptized are the ones that can partake of the Lord's Supper. That's the only one it's going to mean anything to or do anything for. So, you know, we see that how that carries over into the New Testament worship. Let's see. Another one, crossing the Red Sea. That's back in Exodus 13. Oh, I got my 14. I'm sorry, I got the wrong reference up there. 14:13. Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. So we see salvation that was about to happen for the Egyptians. Whom you see today, you will see again no more tomorrow. Verse 16, but lift your rod, it's talking to Moses, and stretch your hand out over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. in 22, so the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right hand and on the left. And 1 Corinthians 10, Paul brings up the crossing of the Red Sea and applies it in the, for us to consider in the New Testament. And today, verse 1 and 2, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, and were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea." So, and he makes that application to apply today. Also, bread from God, and this is what we'll be covering tonight, by the way. We haven't talked about this. And drinking from the rock, Exodus 6, chapter 16, verse chapter 17 through verse 7, we'll be covering tonight. But he will be raining bread for heaven from us, and he'll strike the rock, and water will come out of it. Verse 3 and 4, that example brought up. I'll eat the same spiritual food. Verse 4, "And all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that had followed them, and that rock was Christ." So y'all see how it just over and over again, things that we're studying right now is just brought up again and again in the New Testament. So it really helps to have a good understanding of the stories, because the New Testament examples are just so numerous, and there's probably some more you could probably think of. Just the circumstances that we talked of, some of them like the Israelites were living in a foreign land. They were pretty, had been settled there a long time, but they were strangers or foreigners in a foreign land, and this was not to be their home. God had promised them a home in a different place. Well, today, we're called strangers and foreigners in a foreign land, pilgrims. And that's us being in the world. This is not our final dwelling place. We're just temporary. We're just visitors here. So we're to look forward to our promised land, which is heaven. That example also. And y'all might think of others that apply also. So we go to chapter 15. We'll start looking at our text again. This is the journey to Sinai. They actually had two reasons to go to Sinai. One of them Fred brought up in chapter 13, verse 17 and 18. I don't know if Fred remembers that, but any of y'all, everybody else remember why they didn't go one of the obvious ways? They weren't prepared for war, right? God knew they weren't prepared for war. They weren't, even though they're called armies in some of the Bible versions, they weren't as what we think of today as an army. They were called armies as far as a group or a crowd. But they weren't prepared to battle the Philistines. That was one reason. If you think back, there was another reason. This is way back in Genesis. Anybody remember what that was? Genesis 3. Promise God. Moses had an appointment to keep. He said, "I will show you because you will be back here worshiping me with the host of the Israelites also." And that was going to be fulfilled. So that's another reason that they weren't taking the direct route into the land of Canaan or Palestine. So anyway, we just crossed the Red Sea, and they go into the desert of Shur, which is just across from the Red Sea. They have a 3 days travel without finding any water. And we're talking about a pretty big crowd there. So we're talking in excess of 600,000 men. plus women and children. So that's probably well over a million, maybe a million and a half people that are moving. In Numbers 2:32, you actually get the number of people, of men, was 603,550. Of course, that crowd of people, that's a pretty accurate number. There may have been some born in or out of that big a crowd. So it took a while to get there. But that's a huge population to move anywhere. And here they are traveling under guidance of God. How they knowing where to go? Y'all remember that? Yep, a pillar, a cloud, pillar of cloud by day. So, leading them. And then at night, it was a pillar of fire. So, they could travel day or night as the Lord willed following that. As a matter of fact, that pillar was what was ahead of them when they were trapped at the Red Sea. If y'all remember, before they crossed the Red Sea, Israel was right up against the bank. And the Egyptians were in hot pursuit and getting closer, real close, so that they feared for their life. But that cloud, if you remember, came back behind the camp of the Israelites and in front of the Egyptians and separated them and kept them safe till they could get across the Red Sea. So this is still there leading them. Where the Egyptians didn't know where to go, but the Israelites could see what they needed to do. Yeah. So anyway, they're following it, and they're traveling 3 days, and, you know, this is wilderness, so there's not a lot of water out there, I wouldn't think. They're worried it wouldn't be wilderness, right? Because it'd be agriculture going on. They come to Marah and find water there, but it's bitter, and it's probably poisonous. They can't drink it. Even if it's not poisonous, it's so sour that it can't be drank. So they start grumbling against Moses. It's been 3 days. I probably carried water with them, and here they're running out. So it was hard to carry a 3-day supply of water. And they come here to an oasis that has bitter water. Moses will cry out to the Lord, and the Lord will show Moses a tree. Or it may, some versions say, a plant or foliage is shown to Moses by the Lord. And he gets this tree and throws it into the water, and it makes it sweet. And so they're able to drink that water. The Lord makes this decree and law for them. For there he tested them. He tested them, tested him by not trusting. I mean, even with this cloud, that's what's astounding to me. It's from this cloud going from ground up as probably as high as they can see it during the day and fire at night, and they still doubt after just coming through the Red Sea 3 days ago. It drowns the whole Egyptian army, and they crossing on dry ground. They still just doubt. I don't see how, you know, I guess you hadn't been there. Yes. As we go through this lesson tonight, you'll see it several more times. Protection from diseases. And this is one of them if-then statements that I think is pretty significant. If you listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God, and do what's right in His sight, pay attention to His commandments, and keep His statutes. So you got three things there that you need to do. Then something will happen. And at this point, he prompts them that he would not bring on any of the diseases I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that heals you. That's a pretty good promise. But they had to do these three things, not one, not two, but all three. That's part of the if-then kind of statement. You got to satisfy all the ifs before you get the then. And that's the same today. Now, if we got one thing to do before we get something, we do that one. If we have five things to do, there's something about hear, believe, repent, confess, and be baptized. Well, all five's got to be done before the then statement applies, then you will be saved. Another good example. Murmuring from food in chapter 15, verse 27 through 16:3. So I leave Marah, and by the way, Marah, the name Marah leaves means bitterness. And they come to Elam. At Elam, he said there were 12 springs there, which is fortunate, and 70 palm trees, and there they camped by the water. So that's a pretty good camping place for such a large group of people. But they don't stay there. This cloud by day and fire by night has them leave Elam and come into the wilderness of Sin. Now, Sin is not sin as in doing bad. Remember, this is the Sinai Peninsula, so it's a shortened phrase of Sinai. So it might be the wilderness of Sin, maybe. I don't know. And it got anything to do with sin as in doing wrong. So there they come. It's the 15th day of the second month. So it's the 30th day of the Exodus. Well, here we got the whole community again grumbling about something else this time. And it's against Moses and Aaron. They say, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt, there we had pots of meat and had bread to be filled. But you brought us in the desert to starve the whole assembly to death. So they're starting to blame Moses and Aaron for bringing them out there to starve to death. You know, later on in time, they've already complained about water. They complained about their safety when they're at the Red Sea. They complained about water here. They're complaining about not having food. And the blame is Moses and Aaron. The Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. So the people are to go, and he's telling Moses what, giving them the directions. The people are to go and gather each day only for that day. On the sixth day, they're to gather twice as much. And the Lord was testing them to see if they would follow his instructions. And this would be significant. Pretty simple instructions, don't you think? I mean, I wrote it down in one line there, one bullet. Go and gather each day, only for that day. And on the sixth day, get twice as much. That's pretty simple. They might be a simple, easy test. We'll see how they do. So Moses there and go out and say, in the evening you will know the Lord brought you from Egypt. In the morning you will see the glory of the Lord because he heard your grumbling. And he says, you're not grumbling against Aaron and me, Moses saying. You're actually grumbling against the Lord. And he has heard that. So that's something to think about when we grumble against our Bible class teachers and our preachers. And they're trying to share with you the word of the Lord. They may not do as well as they'd like to, which is me most of the time. But so remember who you're grumbling against. I'll try to do better. But anyway. Quail and bread sent. As Aaron was talking, the Israelites looked toward the desert and saw the glory of the Lord appearing in a cloud. It was quail, a huge giant covey of quail. They come up, and so large they cover the camp. So it's quail everywhere, not just a few. I guess it would be an extremely large covey. In the morning, there was a layer of dew on the ground. And when it dried up, they saw what looked like thin flakes of frost, and they said, what is it? They've never seen anything like this before, something totally foreign to them. Moses said, it's the bread the Lord has given. And he tells them each one is to gather as much as he needs, an omer, which is about 2 quarts. And if I know all the ladies here know what a quart size jar is. So that much bread is 2 quarts of that. It's a pretty good bit of bread. I mean, we eat a lot as Americans. I'm sure that would be enough to sustain anybody. So they had plenty for each person in their tent. So So they go out and gather it. Some would gather a little and some would gather much. And then they'd measure it out and give everybody the two, an omer of the bread. Moses goes on and says, no one's to keep any of it until the next morning. Or so there's to consume it today. But still, even though these simple directions, gather for the day, what you need for the day, some of them start hoarding it. They want to keep it overnight, keep leftovers. But the leftover that stayed overnight, the next morning, it was worm infested and it stank. And of course, this made Moses angry because a simple test that the Lord had given them, they were failing. And if you let any kind of group of people, how they act or respond, good or bad, you feel responsible for. And so here the Israelites were fighting a simple test of God. Of course, that would make their leader, Moses, angry. So. Each morning, everyone gathered as needed. But when the sun grew hot, so they had to do it in the morning. They couldn't wait. As the sun grew hot, this bed would just melt away and be gone. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, two omers each. So that'd be about four quarts for each person. And they reported to Moses by the leaders, the Lord commands tomorrow's a day of rest, the holy Sabbath to the Lord. They were to bake or boil, however they wanted to prepare their bread. Save what was left until morning. And that they saved on the sixth day, and they got up the next day, it didn't have the worms in it. It didn't stink. It was still good. Good to eat. So they saved it without spoiling. Good to eat. Now on the next day, there's none to be found. So if they didn't get it on the sixth day, enough for the Sabbath day, they didn't have enough. Now Sabbath, Sabbath means, the Hebrew word means to desist or cease and rest. We've heard the phrase Sabbath before. What was it in relation to? Before, way back. Creation. On the Sabbath day, the seventh day, God rested. That's called the Sabbath, to desist, cease, or rest. But up till now, there's not a lot said in the Old Testament about keeping the Sabbath. But here, it's plain what they're supposed to do. And they're to keep the Sabbath. Anyway, some still tried to gather their bread on the Sabbath. There's none there. The Lord says to Moses, how long will you, talking about the Israelites, not Moses particularly, refuse to keep my instructions and commandments? The seventh day is a day of rest. No one is to go out. Now, remember I wrote the God's commandments or instructions on two lines. What were they? Go in the morning, gather for the day. And on the sixth day, gather twice as much. How hard is that? Still, people couldn't do it. They called the bread manna. It was white like coriander seed, tasted like wafers made with honey. So that's the description of it. The Lord commanded that an omer of manna be kept for generations to come, and Aaron laid it up before the testimony. And we'll find out more later on what that's about. The testimony, yes. But some of it was to be saved for a long time. They will be eating this manna for 40 years. And we'll see that more in the story. And in chapter 17, they set out from the desert of sin and they come to Rephidim. There's no water there. So the people start quarreling with Moses, saying, give us water to drink. He brought us out to die of thirst. And he asked them, why do you put God to the test, or why do you tempt the Lord? Some versions might have. Moses asked the Lord, what am I to do with these people? They're ready to stone me, because here they are without water again. The Lord directed Moses, go ahead with the elders of the people, take the staff that he struck the Nile with at Horeb, or near Sinai, strike the rock, for water will come. So Moses did that in a place we called Massa or Meribah, and that means testing or quarreling. We read about the defeat of the Amalekites. The Amalekites attacked the Israelites. Now, Amalekites were a group of people living in the area. A little bit more details given about that in Deuteronomy 25. If you want to turn over there right quick, verses 17 and 19, on how these attacks played out. Deuteronomy 25. Verse 17 through 19. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt. How he met you on the way and attacked your rear ranks, all the stragglers at your rear, when you were tired and weary and he did not fear God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord your God is giving you rest from your enemies all around in the land which the God, Lord your God is giving you to possess as an inheritance, he will blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. You shall not forget. So we'll see how that plays out in the Bible story. But at this instance, they're getting harassed by the Amalekites. Moses tells a fellow a new name, a new person we just hear about here, and we'll hear a lot more about later. Joshua says, choose some men and go fight. I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands. So Joshua sets out to fight the Amalekites. Moses, Aaron, and Hur go up to the top of the hill where they can see them, where they're doing the battle with the Amalekites. Now, there's really something I kind of noticed in this. It may or may not be significant, but there's no record of Moses seeking God's advice prior to verse 9, saying what he's going to do for Joshua. You notice how, although God helps, Moses' frailty is revealed. Remember, Moses is about 80 years old. So, as he goes out to battle, as long as Moses holds up his hand, Israel prevails over the Amalekites. But his battles will take some time. Holding this staff of the Lord up, this rod, anybody holding a stick up for hours is going to get tired, so it's going to start dropping. So he can't hold it up. When it started dropping, the Amalekites started prevailing over the Israelites. When it could hold it up, the Israelites would prevail over the Amalekites. Well, they got tired. I think that's why I brought up God kind of showing the frailty. You know, it didn't like he held it up and the Israelites want to win. He had to keep holding it up. I think Moses was getting a lesson there because he kind of jumped out on his own and said, you know, you'll prevail over the Amalekites without, you can't tell that he consulted God on this. But as he gets tired of holding that rod up, Aaron and Hur pull a stone up for Moses to sit on, and they help him by holding one on each side, holding his arm up, and keep the rod lifted so that the Israelites can sit and win the battle of the Amalekites. Lord told Moses to write this in a book to be remembered and make sure that Joshua hears that God would completely blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. And we'll see that play out in the Bible story much later on in time, not this quarter. Moses built an altar and calls it, the Lord is my banner. The Lord will be at war with Amalekites from generation to generation. This battle will go on for a while, play out later on in the story. This is our first story. Reunion of Moses and Jethro. Of course, Jethro was Moses' father-in-law. He had heard everything the Lord had done for Moses. Apparently, Moses had sent Zipporah, his wife, and sons back to Midian sometimes when he was dealing with Pharaoh. During the plagues or before the plagues. The two sons were Gershom And this defines what their names mean. Gershom, I have been a stranger in a foreign land. And Eliezer, the God of my father, was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. So Jethro, Zipporah, and sons come to Moses. Moses will bow and greet Jethro and tell all that happens. Jethro worships God and brings a burnt offering and other sacrifices to worship the Lord. And Aaron and the elders come and meet with them and eat bread before the Lord. The next day, Moses sits to serve as judge before the people. And there's people all around them. Remember how many people we're talking about here. From morning to evening, questions, problems, you know, people dealing with people, you're going to have problems. It's inevitable. And Jethro questions, why is Moses having to sit through all this and deal with this? So he suggests that Moses is just wearing himself out doing making all these decisions for the people. It's too much to handle alone. So he says to teach them the decrees and the laws and show them the way to live and the duties they are to perform, advice Jethro's giving Moses. And he also tells them select capable men of judges of thousands, hundreds, groups of thousands, groups of hundreds, groups of fifties and tens. They will judge the smaller matters, and Moses was to judge the greater matters. And it's kind of interesting, it says, if you do this, and God commands, you will be able to endure, and the people will go home in peace. So Moses takes Jethro's advice, and Jethro departs from him. He lives in Midian, and he goes back home. That kind of finishes our narrative, what we're supposed to cover tonight, but what Doug had brought up, y'all remember how many times they murmured? I got four listed here, and I'll give you the first one. They murmured at the Red Sea that Pharaoh's army was behind them about to attack them. What was the next one? At Marah, where the water was bitter. What about the next one? The one before that. The wilderness of sin. Yep. Wilderness of sin when the food was gone. And at Rephidim, when no water was to be found. So, those were the times they murmured. We need to consider that today. And not murmur against the Lord, because He is providing our every need. Thank you. I appreciate y'all's participation.